Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with my space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin. We're talking about space tourism. And we started by bringing up, I brought up the World's Fair, which I'm so bummed that we don't do things like that today. I just think that was, I don't know, that just would have been, I don't know. It's also, I guess it's one of those things too, that it's probably, it was the Industrial Revolution and the, you know, like those moments in time, you can't quite capture it probably the same way now as it was back then, because electricity, you know, was
a different zeitgeist. It's like, yeah, I feel like we're so overexposed to science fiction now that,
yeah,
when we would see something, if we go to a World's Fair now, it'd be like, eh, you know, I've seen better stuff on,
right,
you know,
right,
the Advance or whatever, insert show name here.
We
can look up everything online anyway, so you don't really.
Yes.
The world is constantly now in a World's Fair.
I think that that's also why people aren't as interested in space science, like real space science now, because they're like, well, where's the hyperspeed? Like, where's the,
where's the warp drive?
Yeah, where's the warp drive? I don't understand. So right or wrong, I guess that it's changed the way we idolize space. But that idolization, I think that was the ground, you know, zero for space tourism, is definitely the Apollo astronauts. Like, that definitely was, you know, people came to Florida just to go to the bars that they knew that the Apollo astronauts might be in, you know? So there was an intentional crafting of the, like, iconic hero status of these men. And it, of course, it built up an industry. I'd say that an industry that still is, you know, some of those restaurants and stuff still exist down
at
Cape Kennedy. So
they are.
I have not been there.
Speaking of space tourism, I've been to Kennedy in Cape Canaveral area for a couple NASA social events. We can get to what those are later. And the group of people that I went with, one of them said we should go to this restaurant because all the astronauts go to this restaurant. All right, fine, sold. That's all I have to say. And we went, and sure enough, the walls are covered with pictures of astronauts or other members of the other crews that had eaten there, and they're all signed and everything. And then I found out as we went to other restaurants, the older ones anyway, every single one of them has framed photos of all the astronauts that have come through. It's a very, very big deal. It's a big part of their culture over there, and I love it. It's great. There's always someone somewhere who knows, like, oh, astronaut so-and-so always came here. He loved the chicken wings or whatever it was.
He used that bathroom over there.
Yes.
And he was in there for 15 minutes after the chicken.
And he didn't have a cell phone, so what does that tell you? Anyway.
Yeah, no, actually, no, that's kind of funny that you mentioned that Yerkes Observatory, which is considered the birthplace of modern astrophysics, is very close to my house. And so when I was a kid and we would take tours there, again, kind of space tourism, no one actually knows where Edwin Hubble had his office. Like, there's no record of, like, which room did he actually use when he was here studying? But they would tell us that on the tour. They'd be like, touch this doorknob. Hubble touched this doorknob. He would be like, okay, Hubble touched it, you know? And then later I found out people are like, yeah, no one has any idea, like, which room was used for what. Like, no one kept any records of who was using what space. So, the Florida is obviously the big one, right? Florida and Houston, there's, you know, museums there. There's lots of reasons for space history and maybe bumping into important people in space presently to go there. You know, you can most recently see space tourism really blossoming when we had our first Artemis launch attempt in the summer, this past summer. And, like, everyone and their mom seemed to be down there at that time. And everyone's taking pictures with each other. And they're going to the restaurants. And they're doing all these things. I mean, there's definitely, when there's especially a historic first launch of something or something significant, it draws the masses. And I think that's so cool. Like, it's to me, it's better than like a concert. Concerts pull in hundreds of thousands of people, but
right.
To me, the there's something about that launch. It's a first. It's a first. That's why I'm telling you the super heavy down in Texas. I don't.
I feel like, I don't know. It's like this weird jealousy I have, because both in terms of the history and also the ongoing stuff, there's so much. The space industry is just like localized to America, to the United States.
Like, sure.
There are more and more things being done in Australia, you know, launch sites in the northern part of the country and the Australian Space Agency in Adelaide. But like, it's not on the same level. We don't have that same history. So yeah, definitely if people are listening and they have the ability to go down to Florida and to see a piece of this history themselves or to witness a launch, like, just do it. Just do it. Do it now.
I know. I want to, but yeah, it is. It's unfortunate for anyone who's not near these space coasts. I mean, I'm not super duper close to the space coast, but I'm within driving reasonable distance compared to where do you live. So,
I could not drive from Australia.
No,
unless I'm driving in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I guess, maybe the downside of space tourism compared to, say, like going to a concert. If you're going to a concert, you know that the concert's going to go, unless that artist for some reason is sick or something like that. Whereas rocket launches are very, they're very impromptu, right?
Right.
You might see it, you might not. And so it's, really? It's one of the risks. And so I think that's why that it's also good that there are those museums and other things to see to get your space mm-hmm. fix, if you will, because it helps soothe your pain of making that effort to go there and not actually see a launch. But
I think just about every NASA facility has a visitor center.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So you can go and just, you know, look around and learn a couple things. I know near where I live is NASA's Ames Research Center. Mm-hmm. And you can't just walk into the research center. There's armed guards and stuff like that. But there is a visitor center right in front of it. And there's a moon rock in there. So if I wanted to, I'm about 30 minutes away from just walking up to and looking at a moon rock. So
cool.
If there's one near you, please do check it out. It's actually quite nice.
Yes. I think there used to be actually one kind of close to me. It wasn't obviously a NASA center, but there was like a NASA outreach sort of museum thingy. Someone told me about it, but I don't think it's open anymore. Anyway, there is a lot of things to do to go see and get involved with space on the ground. But we also wanted to talk about space tourism. There is more than just tourism for those who have earthbound ambitions. There are people who also have spacebound ambitions and very deep pockets, deep
pockets.
Very deep pockets, who are able to actually pay their way to go to space. So the OG mm-hmm. space tourist, who was the first? Benjamin, I think you know who that is.
Dennis Tito paid $20 million to hop a ride aboard a Russian Soyuz in 2001. $20 million to go to the International Space Station. NASA and the European Space Agency both said, no, don't take this guy to the space station. He's not trained. He's not part of any, you know, mission or does not coming for any scientific research. And Russia said, stop us. And so they did. He just paid him $20 million. And he did all the flight training and he went up there and he spent about a week or two. And that's it. He's just a very wealthy guy. He just wanted to go and that was it. And Russia in total sold 8 seats between 2001 and 2009 for anywhere between $20 and $35 million a pop.
That's insane.
And they all went to the space station and nobody wanted them there and they didn't.
I was gonna ask you that. So like imagine you are this astronaut who got selected. You know, they train for like 5 years plus before they go up. And, you know, you finally get up there. And then they're like, hey, don't get mad.
But there's this guy, Dennis,
won't really know what to do about, you know, running the facility. So you're just going to have to kind of take care of him.
Just keep him away from the doors.
Teach him how to use the toilet. I know. But, you know, there's nuances on how to use the toilet. You got to teach him that. We went there.
Toilet humor.
Here we go.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
The second guy after Dennis Tito to go to space, and all of these astronauts who you just mentioned, who flew all these eight, all flew on the Soyuz. But the second one, his name was Mark Shuttleworth.
Oh, my God.
Ah.
That was... Wait, hold on.
That was a great one. Okay, I...
He's actually the guy who developed Ubuntu, the Linux-based operating system. Thanks for that.
He was maybe purposeful in some way. I don't know. I don't. Right. I guess. How would NASA stop? I guess I don't know. That's an uncomfortable situation to be in, right? Yeah. As a collaborative organization with other countries, and I guess, you know, by all means, we probably have done, maybe not to that level, but we've done things too where we're like, well, this is what we're doing, and probably Russia would be like, wait, we don't know if we like that, and it's like, it will stop us. So I, you know, it's I guess it's sort of like a sibling relationship where you're, you know, you're in the same room, put a little duct tape down the middle, and everyone tries to play by the rules.
That's funny.
The duct tape has to go all the way around because the floor is
the ceiling. There's an ceiling is the floor.
Astronaut doing a spacewalk out there.
Yeah.
This is my side of the space station. But so this person who first started it, what was his name again? I'm sorry. I keep thinking Danny DeVito, and it's something
Dennis
like Tito.
Dennis Tito.
Understandable mistake.
He set the precedence, and, you know, we see this happen in so many different things where one person does something and then a bunch of other people are like, hey, I didn't even know that was an idea. And so then others have followed. Up until even very recently, we've had, you know, commercial paid people go to the ISS. We had, the last guy was that Japanese one that we've talked
also
about.
Also on a Soyuz.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, but he's the one who's doing the Dear Moon project. We've talked about him here.
Yes.
So, this concept of commercial astronauts has been kind of, it's stirred the pot. It's definitely stirred the pot. We should probably take a break, and we'll talk about commercial astronauts and what, how this is changing language. This is changing, you know, the FAA and their, you know, language of what constitutes as an astronaut or not. So let's take a break. We'll continue when we get back, or you can just wait a hot, like, 5 second pause and then we'll be right back. I don't know. And, and we're going to talk about this space tourism. So you are listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with my space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio.